We've decided to call today's drink Demon Mead. That's D-A-E-M-O-N.
Right. From the world of Deborah Harkness, where they're light and bubbly and a little phonetic.
Yeah. A little ADD. Excitable. Bit. They like to go to bars.
This is
get creative.
I know that we chose sugar-free, but it tastes real sweet. Like, I feel like it's going to make me real hyper.
We'll put the recipe, which is just a random absurd. We're like, let's add this to this and see what happens. It tastes like... Right, a medieval, if, you know, fair.
If we were witches, we'd be the kind that explode our workshops periodically. I'm just gonna.
Yes. Gather the coven. L'chaim. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Yonit.
Welcome to the Kiddush Book Club. What's funny is we talked for like 5 minutes after we just recorded that intro, and it led to, oh, that's what Deborah Harkness does. What Deborah Harkness does is she said that she spends a lot of time writing with a pencil or pen instead of just the computer.
Yeah, I'm having eye problems with looking at screens too much because that's my day job, plus like the phone addiction thing. So I'm like, oh no, I need to work on my writing, and how do I do that when I can't look at a phone? So I'm reading on a Kindle. And I'm reading physical books, and then I might write on paper. Like,
yeah, I think that's old school. So if we send, if you sent us a message, like, or we sent you a message about being on the podcast, and we say to you, we want a print copy of the book or a Kindle download, that's the reason. It's not right, like that. That's really genuinely for me. I don't necessarily read Kindle, but I can. But for Uni, it's really a matter of like,
I just can't sit and read at it.
If you're gonna finish nanoing, then you're going to need to balance how much time you spend looking at a screen. And it can affect your eye problem.
Exactly.
It can't.
So like, we'll see. So maybe I should get a typewriter or something.
A typewriter. That would be fun. A word processor with the with that dark green screen.
Oh my gosh. Could you imagine? I'm sorry. This is my aesthetic. And I'm in the coffee shop like typing.
They have them now. They have these things for writers where it's just a little non-flashy little screen attached to a typewriter basically. So no internet. So you just are forced to work.
So we, which is a great idea, but okay. So we started talking about Deborah Harkness and quickly moved away from that. But to get back to Deborah Harkness.
Yes.
So her her whole thing is, you know, we have all these witches, demons, and vampires who live long lives. And like, there's got to be some set of them. It's like, I don't use the internet.
Yeah.
That's not how I was raised. You're like, listen, things have changed since the 1600s.
Yes.
You just, the younger vampires are like, dude, just check your email. Like, there's got to be some of them who are, like, technophobes or,
well,
like,
we've touched on this before because we've mentioned Deborah Harkness more than once just simply because we like her. But focusing on her for most of one episode is fun. But what we'll do a little quick recap of things we've mentioned before. One is that when I went to hear Deborah Harkness speak, right, she was wonderful. And she said that she starts usually writing with a question, right? Like she went into kind of like a Whole Foods or a Costco or a supermarket and went, what if there was one of these kinds of places, but all it did was sell stuff for witches, right? Or she saw a name of a, you know, missing soldier. And she went, what if he was not missing, but rather became a vampire, right? Like what if we answered questions? And I remember the first time I heard her speak ever, I had not finished writing a book yet. I was still trying to figure out about what to do with real historical figures that were like in, that were foils to my main character. Like showed up. How do I stay true to them? But they're real. Like, what am I supposed to do? And what she said was, the things that are real, right? Like if you have things that they've written and quotes that they've said, use them. But the unexplained parts of their lives is her favorite thing to
That's right. Explore that.
Explore that.
I think, so we looked at our Goodreads libraries today and we only had 34 books in common.
Oh, so, I'm sure it's more if I updated my Goodreads properly. I'm sure I haven't only read 91 books.
No, no. You have like over, you have over 100, but I have hundreds.
Yes.
Or over 1,000.
As I sit here so, in a library of hundreds of books that I've read and I'm like, right, I've uploaded 100, you know.
So, but where we overlap is Deborah Harkness and Jasper Ford. Like those are our strongest places of overlap because I think, you know, I stick to my genres for the most part, which are sci-fi, fantasy, and cozy mystery.
But the thing that we have in common where there's crossover is something I mentioned to you earlier, is when it's academic.
Yes.
When something, when it's academic fantasy, academic historical, academic sci-fi, suddenly I'm like, I'm in.
Yeah.
Which is why we have Jasper Ford also in common, because it's not just that she's like able to hop in and out of books. It's books.
Yes.
She can hop in and out of books, and then books. We get to read Jane Eyre with her. Like, that's yes. that's my favorite part.
Yes. No, I totally get that. Have you read Terry Pratchett?
Not yet, but everyone keeps saying to me, Jessica, if you like all these books, you'll yes. like Terry Pratchett. And so I know I have to binge read Terry.
So what I've been telling people is if you like Jasper Ford, mm-hmm. which we do.
Yes.
You would like Terry Pratchett because there's a surface level of this is fun, mm-hmm. kind of silly. But if you actually like skim below, you're like the social constructs, the political statements, the, you know, he's trying to
commentary.
Something, but you don't have to get it. You can just enjoy the story and let it wash over you without
and
delving
even
into
even if
the...
you got it, he'd be like, nope.
Right. Also that. He was known as a trickster. He was like, yeah. he was very, you know.
Like Neil Gaiman stuff where 100%. People are like, is this what you intended? He's like, nope. No, that's just a sex scene. Like that. It is what it is. Like his replies on Twitter are amazing. So that's so here's another recommendation. If you like Deborah Harkness. Uh-huh. Victoria Schwab or V.E. Schwab.
Ooh. So okay, I got to add that to my
yes, V.E. Schwab. My sister Melinda sat across to me and she's like, well, I like Deborah Harkness. What should I read next?
Ooh.
And I started talking with her about like, what is it you like about these books? And it was a lot of, well, I want there to be some magic and I want it to be smart and I want there to, but I don't want it to be like zombies and I don't want it, but I want the world to be a little different and creative, yeah. but still be a little bit recognizable.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so slowly but surely after going through Amazon and Goodreads and finding all these books that are sold out.
You know, our library does this.
So the you can do ask a librarian.
What should I read next?
Yes. No. So what we came up with was Victoria or V.E. Schwab, depending on which series she's reading or writing. And on the cover was a blurb from Deborah Harkness. And she was like, oh, in. So I started her with the Shades of Magic series, yeah. which is with colors. Like there's these different Londons.
Okay.
And each London has a different shade of color. Ooh. And there are certain people that can travel back and forth between the different Ooh. Shades of London.
That's fun.
And each one is a very different
I like
kind
that.
Of way of living. So if you're, and she's also awesome. Victoria Schwab is great to follow on social media. She's very smart. She gives good advice and she is very open and honest about the writing process. So if you're an aspiring writer or if you're just a V.E. Schwab fan, go and give her a follow. But also Deborah Harkness says to read her.
It's funny that you mentioned that because two Shabbases ago, I was at Shul with my bag of books. And when I say a bag of books, I mean, I was schlepping so many books I regretted it. Like every step of the way, the mile I walked to Shul.
And then uphill at the end.
0.7 miles, whatever.
Yeah.
So Amuna, who we know in the community. Mm-hmm.
Who is 12.
12. So she and I were chatting about books. What does she like to read? What do I like to read? Where do we overlap? What to recommend? And I told her the trick about if you like an author, if you notice that they put a blurb on a book, mm-hmm. that's them trying to say these books are somewhat related. They're yes. similar in
general. Yes.
And she's like, oh. And then she said, well, I noticed that all of this, you know, she mentioned several books. She's like, the same author recommended all the way across, and I've never read her. I'm like, if you read more than one book where she has written a blurb, then you might like her books because they keep asking her, or she just has a lot of time and is super nice.
Well, no, that means that, yes, but that means that the editor who was looking for, either she's friends with all those people.
Could be, also.
Or the editor and agent who were looking for blurbs. Said what readers would which author's readers yes. would like this book. Oh, Deborah Harkness's exactly. readers would like this book. Let's ask Deborah to do it. And then sometimes it's a young adult novel and I'm like, but young adult but Discovery of Witches isn't young adult.
Right.
But that's Deborah Harkness's generous way of saying adults you also will like
you
this.
You also like this. So Amuna like looked at me like I was unlocking the secrets of the universe. So she's like I was like, this is why in class, your teachers ask you to compare what you're reading to other books.
Yeah.
Because that's how we do things, right? You look at a book and you're like, and I explain the whole, where would it sit on the shelf?
Yeah, where it's on
and
the
again,
shelf.
And again, she was just blown
away. Well, the
away.
Other part of that is a lot of writers coming up around the same time. Mm-hmm. They meet each other. They become friends with each other online, in person, through their agent, whatever. They'll blurb each other's books because yeah. they like each other. Part of the reason they came together in the first place is because they had a lot in common.
Exactly.
So if I'm lucky enough to get Anya and the Dragon, which I lent, you know, to these girls, if I'm lucky enough to get someone like Sophia Pasternak to do that, it's because I like Sophia.
Yes.
I like her book, and hopefully she'd like me enough to want to blurb my book
yeah.
if she liked the book after she read it. Like, it's because but the reason I like her book is because it has something in common with the one I wrote.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's something that I would, oh, we had on, you know, Rachel Romero.
Yeah.
I would 100% ask Rachel. I'm asking you now. No, okay. I would 100% ask that because it's in the same genre. And yes. It's a book I enjoyed reading.
Yes.
And recommended to people when I was done. Like, literally, if I could have put my blurb on the cover, I would have.
Her new book also, I think, is very similar.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited for that.
So, it's funny because I recommend books to a lot of people. And
yeah.
I find some people much easier to refer books to than others. I have two friends who are tough nuts to crack. I haven't quite gotten them yet. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep trying.
Yeah.
Tough nuts to be honest, at this point, I think it's them and not me. I love you. I love you very much. You know who you are. But
I wish I knew who you're referring to, but I won't ask.
You know, so okay. I think, and then part of the problem is that the books that they love, I haven't read. So I think at some point I have to suck it up, read the books that they love so I can understand them better and get them books that are like it.
Well, I definitely have friends who I recommend books that don't like them. I don't get insulted.
No, but I know. Continually, I'm trying to find a book that they like. They haven't liked anything I've recommended so far. But then there are other people who maybe they haven't liked every single thing I recommend. But
what's about knowing the other person?
It's a numbers game.
My dad, for example, he knows he's not going to lend me all of his books that he likes to read.
Yeah.
But when he comes up to me and goes, you know what? You'll like this one.
Yeah.
It means I'm going to like it.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
he's not pushing every – he reads a book a week like we do.
Yeah.
It means if he's not pushing a book on me, it's because he knows I won't. So if once every 6 months he says, read this. You have to read this. It's because he knows that he thought of me while he read it. And that's kind of how blurbs work also yeah. is you thought of a certain author while your editor reading. So, okay. So now we get to focus on Discovery of Witches.
I was going to go off.
No, more tangents. All right. Because let's do it. More tangents.
We were going to talk about Jasper Ford, but the interesting thing is you told me to read book two first.
That was because that's how I experienced it. But now I've started changing that because someone recommended that I stop saying that.
Oh, okay. I liked it.
But you liked it.
Jessica said it. So there's some weight to it. So then going back to your recommendations.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if like random internet person or some other person told me, I'd be like, yeah, that's not how I do things. I read things in order.
But because I'd gotten away with that. Now, mind you, I also got away with reading Twilight Book 3 first. But I don't recommend people do that.
I would not do that.
Right. But this time I did because I was like, book one of called The Airfare is a lot harder to understand than book two.
Yes.
So it's easier almost if you start with book two, where it gives you all the information about how the world works, whereas book one just kind of tosses you into it, no explanation.
So in the From Ladies Writing Nano,
yeah.
Flan book.
Flan.
So they were discussing.
Or Flan.
Flan. They were discussing book 2.5 in a series that I couldn't finish book one. And like, it's really the best book of all time. And I'm like, but I can't get there if I can't get through books one and two. Oh, no. Can I skip to 2.5? Because it's hard when an author has so many books and you're coming in. Because Deborah Harkness has several books in her series.
Yes.
And do you read them chronologically? Do you read them like in the world chronologically?
Well, you know, we'll find out because right now we've got Discovery of Witches, Shadow of Night, Book of Life, and then Times Convert. And then she also has a companion book. To the series with like pictures and it's all really pretty. So the thing is that Times Convert is it's mostly not first person like the book is, right? It's half and half because it's half from first person from the main character, Diana, and half third person from one of the other characters you don't really want to know yet. So I won't tell you.
No spoilers.
Her other books that she's writing, which she hinted at when she spoke, are similar. They're not going to be part of the original trilogy, but rather, you know, I was thinking about that one character and I thought, wouldn't it be nice and fun to explore their story?
Because every character she has in her books that I'm only on two books in, but has hundreds of years of life.
So much
and
backstory.
And stuff they've done. Yes. And they've been in the hint to it.
Don't you want her to go back to Salem at some point?
He has a vague accent. Like like, where is he from? What has he seen? Where has he been?
Right. Even slowly learning about Matthew.
Yeah.
Who's played by Matthew Good in the show, but in the books. And I think he's a good Matthew.
His secret life has a secret life that has a pseudonym. And then that pseudonym also has a pseudonym.
Well, being with someone like Matthew it's good that it's Diana. So here's the deal. Diana is a witch academic. No, she's not an academic about witchcraft. She's just an academic at, I believe, Oxford. No?
I don't remember. She's doing research.
She's doing research in England.
Yeah.
And she's originally from Massachusetts, right? Yeah. And she's doing research in England and she's a professor. And she is, so she's not a 22-year-old little something. She's like 30.
She's not a teenager who has to save the world? What?
No, exactly. She's just a woman who knows that she's a witch, but doesn't have any, she doesn't think she has any magic or real magic.
Yeah.
She doesn't know why. So she just kind of was like, I like to read books and I like to study and I'm going to make my life this way. And a vampire who's also an academic.
And she's an expert in alchemy? Among other things, right?
She said, among other things, she's an expert in a lot of things in history and science. So when he comes and falls in love with her, this vampire, the thing is with vampires, witches, and demons in these books is they can sense who each other are in any room they're in. Mm-hmm. So they're in a room with 300 people and they're talking to a random person. They know if it's a demon, witch, or vampire.
It's like Judar. I can relate.
Yes, it's total Judar. You're at a bank in Connecticut at a bank party. You're surrounded by 100 tall blonde goyim. You know who the other Jew is. This like, little different. This is there. You over there, the 410 girl. I know you. You're Jewish. This is, I see you have an ironed head of hair or a shaitel or whatever it is. Correct. You can always find them. So this is very much like Judar, except it's not by looks. It's simply by sensing each other.
Right.
And a vampire falls in love with her. And what's great is he's been around since forever. Right. Like,
I haven't even found out how long yet.
Oh, so I feel like I'm going to spoil that.
Peeling onion layers, right?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to undo. But I do like, to your point, that she's a stable character.
Yes.
She doesn't have any, like, I mean, maybe.
She hasn't been around 500 years.
She has not.
No.
Her family baggage is, like, normal stuff. It's not, like, she has no tortured, like.
That she knows
that story. Exactly.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
Oh, you don't know her tortured backstory because she barely knows her tortured backstory.
Right. So, but it's not like she's, you know, like I really love there's a werewolf anthology I like reading, but like every character has either been orphaned, abused, burned, thrown into rivers, like all this stuff. Like they're just, they have not lived a nice life. They're a little rough.
Like in Twilight, like each vampire became a vampire because they were rescued from dying or something.
Some horrible trauma.
Like an Interview with the Vampire. Yeah. Right. This is different. This is, I mean, some of them are like that when it comes to the vampires. But for witches and demons, they're just born that way. Right? So that's what makes it different is the irony is that the vampires are super like supremacist about being vampires, mm-hmm. despite the fact that they were made that way and they weren't actually born that way. So they have like, it's not because they weren't born that way. It's because they have so much wealth. And the reason they have so much wealth is because they live forever.
Forever.
And they can just accumulate land and property and money and investments over long periods of time. And eventually they're so wealthy that they're like, we're better than you. I don't know what else to tell you. We just are.
That's the thing. You know, it's funny because I'm reading another paranormal series right now where there are different, you know, paranormal beings. And there's some of them that have that same like, well, we're better than you. And like the reasoning is always very tenuous because we're related to air and air is like, you know.
And it's never a good reason. If you're like, of all the people in this space who have the right to be better, it's certainly not you.
And then I'm reading another series that's from the 90s. It's a vampire series from the 90s. And so in that world, there are vampires that are born vampires, Lumia, and then there's vampires that are made. Mm-hmm. And obviously, born vampires are at a higher social status than made vampires.
Because see, that makes more sense to
you. You have no yichus.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, yeah, that makes more sense to me because it's not like you could go, well, you're a vampire, but we know what you were before. You were just some lowly foot soldier in the Civil War.
You were a snack that got away.
You were a snack that got away. Exactly. You were some random guy that I was trying to punish and last minute I decided to save. Right? Like, or you were part of my little army in New Orleans or whatever it is.
Right.
Like, and that's a little spoiler. I'm not going to tell you
I saved you. You owe, you know, I own you and you owe me.
Yes. And by the way, that's part of their structure is
you are
now the son of the person who made you. And it's very, it's almost like gross. Like you bow to them and they take care of you and you have to follow all these very monarchical rules. Yeah. And Diana is certainly not like that. Right?
Right.
She is
the witches and demons
modern.
Have their own structure as well. And she doesn't like those either. Because
no, she doesn't. She doesn't want to have to answer to the council, basically, of witches, demons, and vampires. And there's so much backdoor politics.
So many books have a council that's usually a pain and is, you know, like
a city council?
Yeah, no, like,
I'm just saying.
So, like, Jim Butcher's books, they've just been canceled. He's like, oh, I'm going to get found out by the council.
Yeah.
I'm reading my paranormal romance right now. There's a secret DDA, like a community council that's like, you know, they do things like you can't, you know, you have to keep the sidewalks up, but also magical beings.
I like that. I think of that as like like a PTO almost, exactly. But like with witches.
They're also, they're, you know, like you better rake your lawn. And also we'll kill you if we find you performing blood magic.
Rules are rules. Rules are rules. It's like in the movie, sorry, in the book Witches by Roald Dahl, right? Mm. Like they're run by the High Witch. And if you violate the rules, you die. Like you, there's definitely rules. And Diana has never been part of that because she didn't have magic. She kind of didn't participate. And her aunts who raised her, because every witch book needs aunts. I'm guilty as charged here. They're raised by their aunts. And they never really pushed her in that direction. So she got to be who she is. But when it comes time for her to go learn what kind of witch she is and the power that she has, when her power kind of gets unlocked, through some terrible violence against her.
Yeah.
She is forced into that situation where she has to learn who she is. Meanwhile, she's trying to learn who she is. And Matthew, who's like, I worship you, my love, Ketamia, you know, that kind of lover, is like super protective.
Yeah.
And that's annoying. She hates that.
Right. So it's funny because some of those things are very similar to, like I said, the other books I've been reading.
Yeah.
So either the main character is chafing against the council,
yeah,
because they don't know the rules and like they don't care at this point, or because they are flagrantly violating it because like those people don't know what they're doing anyway. So I've been reading books where there's both of those things, and there's always the overprotective lover who, you know,
it's a vampire thing.
Well, so in the other book I'm reading, he's a shape-shifting wolf, but it's the same idea.
Like loyalty.
You are mine.
Yeah.
I need to protect you.
Witches are not that way.
Except you're a person, and you also, so like in the paranormal romance I'm working on, the love interests are like trying to work on that. Like, I understand you're trying to protect me, but you can't keep me locked in a cage, literally, because, you know, I'm a person and I'm going to try not to get into trouble, but you have to trust me.
You have to trust me. I'm a person. Let me be my own thing. And when he realizes and sees how powerful Diana really is, he's like, whoa, okay.
Protect me.
Yeah, I didn't realize. And she does at one point have to come to his rescue.
But so the main characters in like all of these different books, they do make themselves a target because of their power.
Yes.
Because of the missteps they make in dealing with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like they either misjudge someone's honesty, integrity, or power.
Yes. I felt so bad for Diana. She had her friend who betrayed her and she was so sad about it. Like she was like, that's not possible.
Yeah.
But it is, right? Like Diana really is left to her lonesome. She is really, she does have to end up leaning on her aunts and on Matthew's family. And that's not something she likes to do.
Right.
She's been independent for a long time.
That's part of her.
She's a salaried academic.
It's not a lot, to be honest.
I know, but she's not the kind of person that's like, you know, I mean, listen, I understand the whole professor taking off a semester to lock themselves up in their Massachusetts home and write. But how about professor taking a sabbatical to learn how to use their magic?
Mm.
That doesn't sound very relaxing at all.
No.
Right? It's a little stressful, but she kind of is very powerful. And they start to think that maybe that she is too powerful. It all starts because she's in the library and she summons by accident the Book of Life. And this is a book that has been supposedly made from the skins, the parchment of human witches, and that it contains the explanation for how the first vampire was born. And the magic that created that.
Yeah, she notices that it's different.
Yeah.
And she notices that there's something special about it. So here's what got me was that, like, she knew something about her powers, but repressed as much as she could. Came back to bite her in so many, many different ways, right?
Yeah.
So many different ways. So she either bumbled into or out of situations. And I was like, oh, for the love of all that's good in the world, get it together, woman. You know, like, this is, like, you can't do that. You're not going to survive the next time you do that.
Eventually, she becomes very strong. And
she's very impetuous, though.
Yes.
Very impetuous. And that's part of it is, like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Like, she doesn't think about the long-term implications of stuff that she does. Even when she's using her magic later, she does a few things and she doesn't realize, like, oh, everyone thought I was dead because nobody knew where I was. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, there's implications to, like, nobody knew where I was or nobody could contact me or I walked into the dark barn alone and
stop going into dark barns.
I heard a noise and I went to go investigate. No,
stop doing that.
Do not do that. Why would you ever do? Jessica, do you hear a noise outside?
Let me go up that. Let me go like that commercial. Let's get into the running car. No, instead, let's go into the garage full of axes and the axe murderer standing there.
Do you hear something in the bushes? Let me get my high heels on and let's go investigate.
Let's go up the stairs into the haunted house on purpose. While we think a murderer is in there. So she has a bad tendency to do that. But one of the things I like is it does explore the fact, because Deborah Harkness asked the question, if you started dating a man who'd been alive for centuries, what would happen if he ran into his ex?
Oh,
would
yes.
she be jealous? Would she be like, why you? How is he supposed to date a non-vampire?
Right.
And what about, like, has he ever been married? Has he ever done this before? You can't possibly
He's
be
got
the first.
Random children who are like 700 years old.
Yeah. We don't know. What was his life like before? And in that, how did he slowly adapt to everything? Like, how did he slowly become a person that learns how to use a toothbrush?
And you know, meeting your loved one's family for the first time is generally difficult, only more so when it's the kind of characters that he has in his family tree, which is varied and unpredictable.
Varied, unpredictable, and also some of them are really genuinely stuck in the dark ages. They're like, well, I was a crusader, and she's like, yes, but that means you did some bad stuff. Yeah. And like, well, I fought for Jesus.
And then other people are continually trying to buttle her. Like, she's not used to being waited on. And like, there's like, you know, let me, hold on. No, don't take that yourself. Let me, hold on. Let me,
and she has to know all of this is happening within hearing of the super hearing of vampires.
Right.
So they can hear everything. So she has to like sleep with her husband knowing that his whole family could probably hear everything and that that's just normal.
It's like when I was on a conference call the other day and I was muttering and I'm like, am I muted? Oh my God. Am I muted? Oh God. Did everyone hear me just muttering to myself? Like you couldn't even like under your breath say anything.
Yeah.
They hear you.
They hear you. And I think that that's what makes it really interesting is I feel
the
like
bathroom.
All of it, all of it, the bathroom. If she asked it, all of it has a lot to do with Deborah Harkness asking herself, what historical time period would I like to look at now? Yeah. The Nazis, let's do it. And then she does it. Oh, let's go meet a scientist. Oh, let's go meet, you know, back in the dark age. Let's go meet a king, a queen.
What I loved is that all of the historical characters,
like
she describes like why they are, how they are. And then you're like, legit.
Yeah.
Buy it.
Soul. I buy it, and I really get the environment of it. Like, you can see if you follow her on social media that she does travel the world a little, and she does see the places that she writes about.
She's on a horse now?
Yeah. She was on a horse today. I was like, maybe she'll come on the show. She's on a horse.
Never mind.
Like, I didn't even ask. next time I'm going to shoot my shot. She's very sweet. But I definitely could not compete with riding horseback and picking from a garden.
In England, right.
No, right? Maybe she's in England right now. Yeah. I think they're filming. It is a great show. For those who don't think she's a good Diana, I say they're separate. They're separate experiences, the book and the show.
It's hard. You know, we were going to have a separate episode about film and stage adaptations.
Yes.
Because you know what? There's some things that I love and I'm okay with. Like Les Mis. Who doesn't love the stage version of Les Mis?
You can see that like, a million times.
It's so great. Did I love the book? I also loved the book. Do I compare them? No, but maybe because it's transformed enough that I don't mind.
Well, I also don't compare the movie to the show.
Right.
Or any version of the movie to the show.
Exactly.
They're all their own brand new things.
I don't know why I'm okay with that, but then there's other things where I'm like, this is wrong.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, I have a funny story. I'll tell you real fast. I share a little bit online, but I'll share it with you after the break. It's a Disney Plus related story.
Oh.
So a little bit more info after the break.
Thank you.
So here's my funny story. All right. So Lady and the Tramp.
Yes.
Adaptation.
Oh, I did see that that was happening.
It was, I wasn't, we really couldn't tell if they were CGI dogs or not. That's how good it was.
Oh.
Like animal wise.
Good or bad?
In a good way.
Okay, fine.
No, we were really enjoying it. I mean, it was definitely Lady and the Tramp.
Okay.
And Les Mis wise, the dog catcher, do you remember Lady and the Tramp at all?
Yeah, of course.
All right. The dog catcher is after the tramp the whole time.
Yeah.
And eventually they adopt him so the dog catcher doesn't catch him, right? In this movie, they made that dog catcher so Javert.
Oh my gosh.
Like hardcore. Like the look in his eyes of like obsession.
I will get you.
I will get you. He's the look of joy on his face when he sees him from a distance, like, oh, I found you. It is
a star.
Yes. I kept thinking of like him jumping off a bridge, you know, like trying to kill himself at the end. And he doesn't because, you know, it's a Disney movie. But.
Dark fan fiction coming at you.
Super dark. So here's what happened. My son saw that it was colorblind casting because every adaptation is a different adaptation. This is live action. You can do whatever you want. And he goes, wow, I didn't know that black people and white people at that time were living so peacefully together. And I go, well, they weren't. He goes, but they are in this movie. And isn't it supposed to be set in like the late 1900s or, you know, like in the 1800s, early 1900s? I said, yeah. He goes, so then what is it? Just Disney magic? I said, yeah.
Yes.
Disney magic means they can cast whoever they want to play whoever they want. And we all just fall in love with it. And we disregard historical things because it's not about that right now. It's about puppies.
Exactly.
And that's good. And then he got upset because he said, great. I love it. Disney magic creates equality. That's what he said. That's a direct quote. Disney magic creates equality. Then the movie ends. And it ends on a Christmas scene.
Aww.
Why?
Not equality.
It was not a Christmas movie.
Not.
And then all of a sudden, the last scene, there's a tree. They're singing a Christmas carol together. And that's how the movie ends. And he goes, hey, I thought Disney magic made equality. This is a Christian movie. How about a Jewish ending for once? Or maybe no ending would be better.
Neutral.
Then they thought they spotted a menorah in the window of the house, but it wasn't. It was just candles.
Candles.
And he's like, menorah, it's a menorah, it is equal. And then I'm like, he goes, no, that's not a menorah. That's not equal.
Yeah, so that actually, that idea is in my book.
Of what?
Like, it's a holiday party, but when we say holiday, we mean Christmas.
It's Christmas, yeah. Like, at least the Oprah channel's new Christmas movies are honest about it. We're decorating the
office. Here's your stocking.
Yeah, here's your blue stocking. I know, I definitely know one or two Jews who do the stocking thing.
Sure.
Because they miss it from their childhood.
But I don't want it.
Right. It's not for me. If you're going to offer me something separate. But maybe, or ask me. Just ask me.
That's right.
Hey, Jew. Jewish.
Hey, in light of the fact that we are a diverse workplace, my current job doesn't do this. Let's be clear. But I worked at other places.
You think it would.
Right? My current place is a bit better. But we are a diverse workplace with people who celebrate or do not celebrate many different holidays.
Yeah.
So we either celebrate all or none. It's not like, well, Christmas covers everything. Like, no, that's not how this works.
Yeah. Is there Christmas in these books? I can't remember. Discovery of Witches. I feel like they have Christmas.
You know what? I think we're so used to it that we just don't even notice anymore.
We don't even notice anymore because they're all just sitting around the Christmas table. So
every story, every book series I read that's longer than four or five books
mm-hmm.
has a Christmas story. Like there's one where she's like 32nd in line for the crown and she solves mysteries and the queen calls on her to like take care of things where you need someone of the right class who's discreet but also has some detective skills, right?
Right.
There's a Christmas book, right? Like everyone, like the Cat Who series from Lillian Jackson Broughton, there's a Christmas version. Like
you know what?
The Donut Mystery series has a Christmas
version. In my sequel, I'm having it take place on Tisha B'Av.
Ooh, that's cheerful.
You know, but like to me, that's a more meaningful holiday than sure. Hanukkah.
Oh, for sure.
I
the Jewish Christmas.
It's not the Jewish Christmas.
That's not a thing.
Right? Like, what would be the Jewish Christmas?
So it's funny because what is if we had a Jewish Christmas?
No, but like which of our holidays, which of our Chagim is the equivalent of like being grateful for
No, they're celebrating legit the man's birthday and the gratitude for like his coming to earth.
For the coming of Christ and bringing Christianity.
Because we don't.
So some pastora?
No, like I say, because that's so different than the way that we observe.
Yeah.
That I don't think there's an equivalent. You can't like.
We don't have an equivalent. But
Easter
like,
also. Like these are holidays that we don't. There are other holidays we might have an equivalent to. But like yeah. a lot of them are on saints. They're about saints and, you know. People and
but depth of people. Meaning for Hanukkah yeah. the depth of meaning is so funny because people are like meh, Hanukkah is a throwaway holiday like when it comes to depth of meaning like they really try to pull that meaning out but there's no special davening
you
for
can't
it
commercialize yeah. a holiday that's about being true to yourself and not going with the like popular majority
yeah do you remember that cartoon where the Greek with the Greek letters floating around.
No, maybe not.
It was like a Hanukkah claymation movie or something.
Okay.
No. And it was Greek letters and Hebrew letters, and the Hebrew letters would float in the air, but the Greek letters were heavy and they would fall to the ground, but they were so shiny that the kids would want to pick them up and throw away the Hebrew letters, which would float away. Who cares? Like, I'd rather have the shiny Greek letter. It was, oh yeah, for sure. It was this, the potential to assimilate was strong.
Yeah.
Right? And what's funny is Hanukkah is just one rebellion. In centuries,
yeah,
centuries of Yerushalayim being taken from us and given back, and taken from us and given right. back, and taken from us. And well, you can live here, but you can't celebrate your holiday. Well, you can live here and you could be Jewish, but you can't be Jewish in public. Well, you can live here, but when it rains, you have to go indoors because Jews, when they touch water, you know, muddy the waters, and the Muslims can't walk around us. And that's yeah, really yeah. something that was at the time a belief, right? I don't
you
know,
can
think
be
that's
Jewish,
a belief
but you can't celebrate Shabbos, the New Year, or
right.
Circumcision
because right? it's anti-Christian, right? Right. So it was whoever, whichever
be Jewish,
religion,
except for the three main. But right. Otherwise,
right, exactly. So it's whatever religion was in charge of us was yeah, like, yeah. well, your religion conflicts with our religion in this way. So those are the things you can't do.
Right.
But everything else you can do. So like you can't build your home taller than your neighbor's home if your neighbor isn't Jewish, right? Like there was little things like that. And then, oh, you're kicked out again. Oh, you're back. Oh, you're kicked out again.
We noticed you haven't been buying enough pork lately.
Yeah.
So you're going to burn unless you decide that you're going to like fix that right now.
Well, that's why, you know, over the years, assimilation and forced conversion is really a thing. And so if you try to imbue meaning into your Hanukkah, maybe that's a good way to think about it is
yeah.
we're here. We're Jewish still. That's an ace.
Right. Yeah,
I mean,
definitely. Although
you think oil lasting 8 days is an ace? The fact that there's even a Jew alive today is an ace.
I know. My kid was saying something. I can't remember what he was saying, but I was like, I mean, there are very few ancient religions. Oh, that's what he was saying. Something like, where all these ancient peoples go? And I'm like,
yeah.
yes, there are not very many ancient religions or ancient cultures that are still kicking.
Yeah.
Right. Like
that's true.
There's some, we're, you know, we're not,
kind of, I think
ones,
in Asia, in Asian countries, there's more.
Oh yeah, definitely. They yes. have a more,
a lot more.
yeah. They have a lot more, although they've had some come and go, but like, yeah, the, you know, the Persian Empire gone.
Right. That's
Greek,
true.
Roman. Gone, gone, gone.
Gone, gone, gone. And we're all like, bye. like,
bye, Felicia.
Yeah, bye, Felicia. We're still here. And that's the nace of it.
Right.
Right? Like, that's really a miracle. Do you believe in miracles?
So now I have all these songs stuck in my head. But
it's Maccabee season.
We have so many holidays that, and it's so funny because Rabbi Arlovsky has a whole thing about, like, you know, they joke about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur Jews.
Yeah.
They don't come to any other services. They don't. He's like, why those holidays? Maybe if you're going to pick two holidays, maybe Simchas Torah and Purim.
Because they're more fun.
Like, pick the fun ones. Like,
yes.
Why are you picking the ones where we're, like, starving and in shul the whole
well,
time?
Well, I actually have one or two friends that have chosen Purim. Because it's more fun. Like, they'll come to Yom Kippur for a half day, but Purim, they're there the whole time.
Right. That's
because
what I'm
saying. In Yom Kippur, they're like, you know, I thought I could make it, but I'm out. But with Purim, they show up and they're like, this is amazing.
Like, what's not to like? Like,
yeah.
if you're going to be a twice-a-year Jew...
Pick
like,
the fun ones.
I've got suggestions. Come hang with us.
Exactly. So let's put Tisha B'Av in a book.
Right. I maybe
3 weeks.
Wouldn't hang with you on Tisha B'Av.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a migraine and it's going to be kind of depressing. I'll be watching all Holocaust videos. That's my time to binge those.
Okay. But that's like, okay. So if
you're
writing
like,
a you're romance.
You're smiling as you say that. Like, that sounds
that's
like a great.
Thing. But if you're writing a romance novel and she gets depressed about something and then all of a sudden it's Tisha B'Av and she's like, perfect timing.
I'm wallowing in this.
I'm wallowing.
Fair,
you
fair.
Can throw that in. Absolutely.
Well, mine takes place at Hanukkah time, so it's not really.
Well, do you have a recommendation for someone if they like Deborah Harkness? Because obviously, if you haven't bought into it by now, I don't know what to tell you. But yeah. if you like academia, if you like witches combined with that, if you like history,
historical
even
fiction.
If you don't like fantasy at all, if you don't even like witches at all, if you just like historical fiction, yeah, you will like these.
So I like Diane Wynne Jones. So her books are actually, are they considered middle grade or young adult? I'm not sure, to be honest.
I just read, exactly.
Yeah. But what I'll say is that some of her main characters are children, but some of the content is quite dark.
So I feel like it depends. I think it's technically middle grade if your intended audience is children. Doesn't matter who the main characters are.
It is.
Okay.
But at the same time, I enjoyed reading them immensely as an adult. So okay. Like, whatever. But why I say that is, like, I don't know where you're going to find it. If you go to a bookstore or a library and you're looking for where it's put.
Ask Diane the lady at the front. Jones,
yeah.
Ask the person working in the front. Where do I look?
Diane Wynne Jones.
Yes.
So a little darkness.
Is it Wynne, W-I-N-N? Or
W-Y-N-N-E, I think.
Okay. W-Y-N-N-E.
So obviously they're orphans. Obviously they have some latent magical abilities and they're taken to be trained and taught about those abilities. But she throws you some curveballs. And there's one of my favorite scenes was, you know, one of the characters discovers that there's other realities that he can travel, or this person can travel to, between planes, right? And they have, like, this one the mermaids live, and in this one, you know, there's no gravity, and this other one there's fire raining from the sky, and there's just all these different realities where things are different. And you know, it's about learning who you are. It's a lot like Diana's journey in Deborah Harkness's book.
For sure.
Like, you don't know who you are, and if you're impetuous and you're not thinking about the full impact of your decisions, then people can get hurt. So this character learns some harsh realities. And my favorite scene is, like, they're thinking back and they're like, wait a second. There were, like, butcher paper wrapped packages coming off this mermaid world. Uh-oh.
Ew. I have a, you know, sometimes I refer to my Twitter friends as friends. And I'm like, I've never met you. Friend who's trying to query a book. Which I'm not going to be specific which one, but the description for it, I was like, I don't know how to couch this. It's so dark.
Yeah.
It is so dark. It's so dark. Like, if you think it's you, it's probably not you. It's someone darker. It was so dark in when it came to the way it was described that I was like, maybe don't include that part in the description. Like, maybe let your potential readers discover it later, because they might put it down. Like, it crossed the line almost into so much darkness. Not that I wouldn't read it. I would. I just would go, do I have this in me right now? Or do I want to read Red, White, and Royal Blue?
Listen.
You know what I mean? Like, which one am I into today?
As much as the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to describe it, you're not going to be like, and everyone dies and there's incest.
And there's thank you. Exactly.
Like, you're not going to lead with that.
Describe your dirtiest, worst, most obscene, or most cringeworthy. That's the word I'm looking for. Don't lead with, you know, and he kept their toes on a necklace.
Right.
I'm like, well, I feel like if I read a book where he kept their toes on a necklace, I wouldn't read that book.
Right.
But if it just happened in the book, it would be no different than in Discovery of Witches, the witch that's kept alive with just her head in a box.
Right.
And she's like, please kill me. Like, I need to be.
You don't lead with that.
You don't lead with that. Can you imagine if Deborah Harkness had queried the book with, there's a witch's head in a box. She begs to be killed.
No, I wouldn't lead with that. I wouldn't lead with that. You have to know, like, so, and even as you describe it, like, the whole feeling of the story wasn't that dark.
No.
So
it wasn't. This book is not feel dark. It feels like historical fiction.
So the Diane Wynne Jones ones, they're definitely not light and shiny like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
But it's because it's from a child's point of view. It's also, you see the darkness in the side, like in the corners.
Yes.
Like, in your peripheral vision, you're like,
it's there, but that's not the crux. That's not why you're... So I randomly opened, just to prove a point about Deborah Harkness's books, that they're academic books and historical fiction books, but also, like, the time travel is just something that happens to be part of it, right? So clearly they're, you know, in the past. And Matthew says, women in Diana's time received considerably more schooling than you would think wise, father, just not in Greek. And then he responds, they have no need for Aristotle in the future. What a strange world it must be. I'm glad I will not encounter it for some time to come. Philippe gave the wine pitcher a suspicious sniff and decided against it. Diana will have to become more fluent in French and Latin. Only if a few of our servants speak English and none at all below stairs. See, it doesn't, it feels like historical fiction with, oh, in the future, they won't, like, wait, you're talking about time travel? That makes no sense here. And right. He's a vampire. So they happen to be.
It's not the man anymore?
Right. It's a happen to.
Right.
They happen to be vampires. They happen to time travel. Right. She happens to be a witch. It's
I
not.
Do like that she covers the practical aspects of, like, they have to address and act and speak in the proper way.
Yes.
And she doesn't just get it right away, because that's something they gloss over in time travel. They're like, and I just talked like a normal person and nobody, like.
What a lovely coincidence it was that I learned French in school. Right? And that the French was the same French as 400 years ago.
Even,
but you're saying, oh, I see what you're saying, that they time travel and everyone just understands them.
Right. But in this one, everyone's like, what is she even talking about? And she's trying to learn English.
Yes.
But like old English.
Yes.
Because her manner of speech, like, I think it even goes into like her, like the pattern of her speech and everything's different. Like, she talks about like how it just sounds different. Even if they're saying the same words, she's putting the emphasis in the wrong places. She's doing.
Well, that reminds me, who's it? Somebody who was a editor for Bernie Sanders' speeches was posting online the other day about how in the editor's room or in the writer's room for Bernie Sanders, whenever they're wondering whether or not something is an awkward sentence, they read it out loud with Bernie Sanders' accent and New York inclination. Oh. And then they're like, okay, it works.
Oh, that's
and I'm like, so hilarious. She gave an example. And the sentence made perfect sense to me because it was such a Jewishly phrased sentence. Everything was kind of Yoda-ized. Everything was kind of reversed.
Uh-huh.
Whereas for other people were commenting, all the Jewish people I said commenting were like, what's wrong with the sentence? And everyone else commenting goes, oh, that didn't make any sense to me. But when I read it in Bernie's voice, it did. And I was like, oh, he's just an old Jew from Brooklyn. You know, like, that's when I kind of was like, oh, it's all, you know, we have funny speech patterns. And I wonder if we as Jews went back to 1860 America with other Jews, how we would do.
Well, I mean, how did it work in dalliances and devotion?
Well, they were upper class. They were very.
But still, so the interesting part about English and America is like, we kept true to the pronunciation from England, and England was like, forget this, we're making it fancier.
Even the accent.
Yeah.
So apparently, like,
nope, we need to be
every
fancier.
Movie that has ever described British accent had a British accent from people from England from before like 1776 is wrong.
Wrong! I'm sorry, you weren't fancy then.
They weren't fancy. Apparently, that super fancy accent grew over time.
An affectation.
It was an affectation that grew over time.
I'm not bitter about it.
That's right. Yeah. And that the more upper class you were, actually the interesting part is you sounded even less, like, you notice how the Queen of England sounds less British than someone who's Cockney, right? It's almost, it kind of flipped over time.
Yeah.
You know, they actually ended up sticking more closely to the true way that one would have spoken back then.
Yeah. I do like that Deborah Harkness, like, delves into that. It doesn't gloss over and be like, and I just blended in and it was fine. She's like, no, everybody was staring at me because I walked wrong and I was talking wrong.
Yes.
And I didn't do anything right. And I stuck out like a sore thumb because I didn't know what to do.
Right. Exactly. Because I didn't know what to, I was back there and they had to tell me how to dress and how to make eye contact in public place and how to walk behind the man or next to the man.
Her stride was wrong. Like, everything she did was wrong.
Oh my God. My stride would be so wrong. Unless it was sent back to a shtetl, then I think I'd be okay.
Maybe. I mean, are you pulling a plow? Because I feel like we walk, because I actually watched this really cool thing about how you used to walk toe first because you didn't have hard shoes and you needed to make sure you weren't stepping on something bad. So you would walk with your toe first, and how it changes your gait entirely.
I guess depends on what part of the world you're in. Like in Germany, they were wearing those like leather shoes, which it was basically just like a leather pouch that you laced up over the top of your foot.
Yeah, you feel a rock in that.
I guess you could feel a rock in that. So you would want to be careful.
Unless
how you
you're
take
wearing
a step.
Dutch wooden clogs, which I don't know if that's actually true. So don't like kill me or anything.
I actually don't think they ever did. Isn't that one of those things where it's like a performance shoe?
It's possible.
Like, let's be like saying, well, back in the day in the 1930s, everyone wore tap shoes.
Everyone did wear tap shoes. They all all smoke cigarettes and love jazz.
Yes, at your roaring fringe 20s New Year's Eve parties this year, everyone wore tap shoes.
Where did they get so much fringe? Because everyone was wearing tassels and fringe.
Apparently. Meanwhile, that's the big thing. If you are looking for... This is a good, actually, segue. Roaring 20s parties are coming up. Because it's 2020 and everyone's going to have one. And I intend to dress... Actually, a little more. I'm not going to wear any tassels, and I'm not going to wear any fringe because, in actuality, everyone dressed a little more like Downton Abbey,
right?
Like everyone dressed a little more in like waistless
fronts. I was going to fall in love with someone who was already married to someone else, and throw a big party, to hope them regret that they didn't choose me and that I was pining for them.
Yes,
and
while wearing a waistless front,
too much decadence. That's what I'm
with a lot of decadence. Mm-hmm. I feel like cigarette holders are okay though.
Yeah, sure.
You better get an Amazon listeners before they're all gone.
That's true. It's
I already ordered a 4-pack because they don't have any singles. I already ordered a 4-pack. I ordered a headpiece. They're going.
So I went to a Roaring 20s party years ago. So I already have the whole outfit.
Is it tassels and fringe?
Totes, tassels and fringe. So the thing is that I didn't even buy it from a costume shop. It's just that it was back in style.
It's back now?
It rotates. Yeah, every few years it rotates.
So if you go on ASOS like right now and type in fringe dress, it's like 100 dresses.
Yeah.
Tassel dress, keep going. Shein, tons of tassels. They're just, you know, a little different than, again, midi-length waistless frock. Although I did see one of those on ASOS, like an all sparkly one. I was like, if it wasn't $300, I would totally buy it for this party.
Yeah, that's it's not a flattering style for me. I've got too much hip going on.
It just ends up looking... Also, we're both really short, and we both just end up looking like we were in our house
clothes.
Yeah, or in a house dress.
Oh, you know, if I could get away with just wearing a house dress, like, I'm kind of in.
That would be great. A house dress it is.
A sequined house dress.
A sequined. A sequined house. Listen. Way better than a velvet Chavez robe.
I have one of those.
I know. And I'm saying if it was sequined, it'd be even better.
Right.
Not as comfortable, but better.
It may look like I'm wearing my pajamas, but they're fancy, shiny pajamas.
Yeah, that's what And men. I don't know how many male listeners we have, but, or women, tell your husbands, boyfriends, brothers, whatever. Don't dress like a gangster holding a big gun at your Roaring 20s party. Not every man that existed in 1920 was walking around with a big gun.
Wide lapel, big stripes.
Exactly. This is not a Zoot Suit Riot. And by the way, if you actually look up the Zoot Suit Riots, you will be horrified that you ever thought it was a song or an outfit. It was actually like a really bad riot. And it was a lot of like violence and it was terrible interaction with the police. And Stop. We all need, it's kind of like we went to a Titanic party.
Okay, wait.
And dressed up. We were like, let's dress up like we're dying.
This is kind of a great idea.
A Titanic party?
I'll carry a door and I'll.
And you'll prove that two people can fit on it.
No, because I'm only a single person. So it's just me on a door.
You want a door. I don't think Titanic.
Did you have a plus one? No, he didn't fit on the door.
Okay, but if we pick a disaster that actually took place in the 20s.
Okay, potentially. So, you know, disaster-based parties could be the next thing.
But that's, I see that happening.
Okay, so how about this? There's a book where someone says, Zoot Suit Riot, that's a great song. Let's time travel back to when the song's about because it sounds like it's amazing. And then they get there like, we have made a mistake.
This was a horrible
idea.
This
is wrong. And then they continually are like, okay, what about that? That was fun. And they go back. They're like, oh, no.
No.
I think we just got dysentery. And...
like the Blitz. No. You do not want to go back to London during the Blitz. Like, this is a bad plan. I know it looked charming and all those little Disney movies, which must be on Disney Plus now.
But you have to imagine that if time travel becomes like a travel industry.
Yeah.
Sightseeing. Ooh. Like, people are going to do that. And they'll be like, oh, my God, but that would be amazing. They're
First of all,
came back with typhoid.
Disaster tourism. I actually had a story I wrote, which I shelved. Which was disaster. One guy was doing some disaster tourism and he was taking pictures and selling them.
That's dark.
And he posting them on Instagram, like selfie with the Brooklyn train crash.
That's dark.
And it was super dark.
Well, Auschwitz.
Selfie with Titanic.
Auschwitz selfies have been a huge thing. So,
yes.
Like,
I think.
I could see it happening because people are terrible.
You know, I was uncomfortable even taking pictures at all with Auschwitz.
Right.
Like, nowadays, the trend is to not necessarily the selfie thing, but to line up backwards so that you're facing Auschwitz, like with your Israeli flags hanging over your shoulder. Like, oh, look, we're marching into Auschwitz as survivors instead of as you know, victims. That was not, when I went in the 90s, that was not such a trend. It was more, don't take any photos at all. Like there was no photos.
It feels so, those places feel so oppressively somber that I couldn't even imagine taking out my camera.
But at the same time,
especially back in the day when you legit had to take out a camera, you had your phone on you. That's a little different.
But you end up having a moment where you go, I feel like I need to document this if it's something current, like finding a random swastika drawn that's new outside Auschwitz. I felt like I had to take a picture of it just to prove that it's this year and this thing happened. Like after 9/11, I was like, do I take a picture or not while this is happening?
Yeah.
And I debated it and I debated it. And someone's like, yes, you do, because it's not like you're going, you know, down to ground zero and you're touring around it's 20 years later. You're bearing witness to something so that years and years and years from now, someone will believe that it happened.
Right.
You take out a photo and go, it happened.
I went to Pearl Harbor and the only pictures I took were like of part of the display in case I wanted to peruse it later. Like they had maps and they had dates and they had like a lot of names and things, and I wanted to take pictures so that later I could look back at it and be like, oh, that's right, because there were so many details.
Well, someone else already did the work for you, right? Exactly. Like, when you go to a museum, someone else already did the work for you. But if you're the one who's standing in history, you want to record it. And that's the other thing with these books is Diana's getting a chance to kind of, like, witness and participate.
My favorite is when she's like, oh, my research is wrong, or everything I've learned on this subject is wrong.
Totally wrong. Basically, what happens is she learns she's a time walker, which she can walk back. Literally, she puts a foot down and walks back into another time. And
500 miles or years.
Oh, I'll admit, I let that. And I wasn't sure, like, what came first, that or what I wrote where, because in the there's stories in the Kabbalah and Hasidus of like people that would put their foot down and then they would propel themselves to another location, you know? And so I was like, oh, maybe she got it from there. Like, she is good at research. And she has, now she has books and the internet at her fingertips.
Oh my
gosh. This is her first foray. Can you imagine what we're going to get in the future from her?
Okay. And I also, I want to point out that, like, you know, people have been writing novels and creating things since, like, what we saw that there were women novelists in the 1400s.
Yes.
Earlier than we ever expected. Okay, listen, I was Googling so much and my book takes place in now. Like, I can only imagine, how did these folks do the research? Or maybe they didn't. I don't know. Like, how do you write without the internet?
You know,
how do you?
It's like that book, Race the Titanic,
where
the Titanic is intact, because at the time they didn't know yet.
Right.
The Titanic had split. I think that's the beauty of literature, and that's why schools update what they're teaching, and that's why we have to keep reading, and why, you know, that's like that song, like, there's so much to learn, Rabbi, all the safari. Do you remember that song? Do you know that song? It's about basically a kid singing, but Rabbi, how am I ever going to learn everything? It'll take so long to read everyone, and I'm afraid I'll never be a Talmid Chacham. And the Rebbe's like, just keep reading.
One at a time.
And I always totally understood that song, because I was like, how will I ever know everything? And the answer is, you won't.
You will.
But you'll know only as much as you read. So I feel like it's a good way to end it for today. So you can tell us if you're going to read Deborah Harkness's book and give us any recommendations. If we like that, what should we be reading?
What's next?
I promise I'll update my Goodreads.
Okay, good. I'll help you.
You promise? Okay, good, because I need a lot of help. If you want to follow us on Instagram, we're Kiddush Book Club. And you could find me on Twitter at Hoffman Jess.
And I'm Yonit DM. Everywhere.
She's everywhere. Yonit is omnipresent.
Omnipresent. No, I just have too many accounts, I think.
Well, so you're also omniscient, omnipotent.
I'm very consistent that I keep the same alias across every social media account.
Fantastic.
So
when she's a famous romance Hanukkah author, you can say you knew her when.
That's right.
I promise you, I'm going to get her there. I will not let you people down, and neither will Yonit. She is nanoing the crap out of this book.
I'm going to get there. I'm a little behind.
Time is going to pass anyway.
That's right.
If you're out there.
This is a kickstart. It doesn't have to be within this month, but it gave me my kickstart that I need. So if you haven't started your NaNoWriMo yet, it is not too late. I was a week late.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's just a kick in the pants. It's accountability. It's like the buzz and the fervor of everyone doing it together.
It's fun.
But you don't have to wash because you didn't start with us. So
that's right.
Start now.
You can join. Start there. Let us know if you join NaNoWriMo.org, and we'll tell you what our names are there so you can buddy us.
That's right.
Thank you for coming today to the Kiddush Book Club.
Ne'ah, 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 ne'ah